Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In one of the passages which we looked at in another core concept video, Epicurus says that it is impossible to live pleasantly without living prudently, well, and justly. And what does that mean, to live prudently, or to live according to practical wisdom? Well, one way of understanding that is in terms of what we call practical rationality or practical reasoning. That is, reasoning about what is good and what is bad, what we ought to do, how our desires ought to be formed, what sort of choices we ought to make. That's all part of practical reasoning. Now, being a hedonist, Epicurus thinks that the central goal is to live a happy life. And a happy life means the most pleasant life, the life that actually has the greatest degree of pleasure, and in return, the least amount of pain. So he also has, there's a priority accorded to certain kinds of pleasures that's going to be very important. Mental pleasures over merely bodily pleasures, so books over beer, you could say, and what he calls static pleasures over moving or kinetic pleasures. That's a little bit more of a technical distinction, and you're going to want to look at the video on that. To put it in a thumbnail, so moving pleasures are those which require us to do something to enjoy something, like drinking a beer, right? Scratching an itch. Static pleasures are those which we enjoy when pains, when troubles, when demands and needs have been removed, and we just enjoy this wonderful state where nothing really is going on, but it's really enjoyable. So there's a priority of those, and also an avoidance of mental pain. Because mental pains, like fears, for example, fear of death, are, according to Epicurus, much worse than the physical pains that we could feel. You know, there's that Shakespeare quote that people like to bring up, that a hero dies just once, but a coward dies 1,000 deaths. Is it 1,000 or 100? I don't really remember. In any case, it's a lot, right? Even if it was just 2, it would be more. And the idea is that the coward is somebody who's beset by fear, and that fear makes them suffer more than the hero who actually suffers one death. Now, if we want to be good practical reasoners, one of the things we need to do is examine what is to be chosen and what is to be avoided, because that's what practical reasoning culminates in, choice and avoidance. This is how it's been classically understood. There's a few passages that I want to bring up that deal with this. One is from the Principal Doctrines. He says, if you do not on every separate occasion refer each of your actions to the end prescribed by nature, but instead of this in the act of choice or avoidance swerve aside to some other end, your acts will not be consistent with your theories. So if you're an Epicurean and you want to be doing good practical reasoning, you need to keep that end of being happy. Of being happy for your you know, as much of your existence as possible, and not just the immediate gratification available to you in the present. If you want to be consistent, your choices and avoidances need to be consistent with your theories about the nature of choices and avoidances. So what does he have to say about this? Well, like I put here on the board, you want to count the costs of pleasures in terms of other pleasures and pains. So he's got this great passage in the letter to Menoesius where he's discussing moral theory. And he says, every pleasure is a good on account of its own nature. Every pleasure is good by itself, right? So that makes sense. That doesn't mean we should pursue everyone. He says, that doesn't mean every pleasure is worthy of being chosen, just as every pain is an evil, and yet every pain must not be avoided. So why would we not pursue every pleasure and not avoid every single pain? He says, we have to estimate all these things by the measurement and view of what is suitable and unsuitable. For at times we may feel the good, that is the pleasure, as an evil. And at times, on the contrary, we may feel the evil as a good. And we think contentment, that's this again, a great good, not in order that we may never have but a little, but in order that if we have not much, we may make use of a little, being persuaded that those men enjoy luxury most completely who are the most able to do without it. So there's some reasoning going on here, right? He also says, just a little bit before that, you know, we affirm the pleasure is the beginning and end of living happily. We recognize this as the first good. And with reference to it, we begin every choice and avoidance. To this we come as if we judged every good by passion as the standard. And since this is the first good and innate in us, we do not choose every pleasure, but at times pass over many pleasures when any difficulty is likely to ensue from them. And we think many pains better than pleasures, when a greater pleasure follows for them if we endure the pain for a time. So think about exercise, for example. I hate exercising. I used to really enjoy exercising, but it's been, you know, at least 20 years since I've really enjoyed exercising, which is why I'm a little bit overweight and I'm not in particularly good shape. If I have to do a lot of heavy lifting or walk a long distance, I feel a bit winded and, you know, I'm not up to things. It would be good for me to get in shape. And one of the reasons I don't do it is because it's kind of painful to do, right? But that would be a really good pain to endure because it would lead to greater pleasures or at least a lack of pain. A classic example, actually, one unfortunately that I suffer from, is arthritis. If you are arthritic, then you need to keep moving, even though it hurts a bit to keep moving, because if you allow yourself to say, "Ah, I'm just going to take it easy and stay still," the arthritis will actually get worse. But if you can keep yourself moving, you can find that the physical pain isn't so bad, and it's part because you actually need to keep everything moving along. That's some good practical reasoning right there. He goes along and says a couple other things as well. He says, question each of your desires. This is a really smart thing to do, isn't it? What will happen to me if that which this desire seeks is achieved? And what if it's not? So when you have a very strong desire, you say, oh, I want to get that, you know? This would be, my life would be so much better if I bought that thing. Ask yourself, ask that desire, what would really be the case? What would actually result from this, or probably result from this? Not just what you're telling me desire, but what's more likely to result from this? What can my experience teach me? And how bad is my life going to be if I don't buy that thing? If I don't pursue that pleasure, if I don't drink that bottle of wine, if I don't listen to, you know, go listen to that concert, it may not be bad at all. As a matter of fact, you may be freeing yourself up for other things. Again, practical reasoning. You have to actually count the costs against each other. You can't just go by instinct or feeling if you're an Epicurean. This is actually a very deliberate kind of living that's going on. He also says, no one chooses a thing seeing that it's evil, but being lured by it when it appears good in comparison to a greater evil, he's caught. All right? So we have to be careful to distinguish what's really good and what's really evil. Again, for Epicurus, it's going to be in terms of pains and pleasures. He says, no pleasure is in itself evil, but the things which produce certain pleasures entail annoyances many times greater than the pleasures themselves. Great example of this, cheating on a partner. Right? You're in a committed relationship and it would be easy to cheat with somebody else. You know, let's say you're at here's a classic case, right? Movies are made of this. You're at a conference, you know, a convention, right? An insurance convention. And you're in a big hotel and you're down at the bar and there's a beautiful or handsome stranger across the bar from you and they're coming on to you. Let's say you're even in Las Vegas, right? So now you're thinking, oh, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, or whatever nonsense you want to tell yourself, right? You're posed with an issue. It would be fun to go off and have sex with that person. Or, you know, even just make out and flirt or something like that. That's cheating too. On the other hand, what sort of pains might result from that? That's the sort of thing that people don't ask themselves when they're jumping into that situation. Or they minimize those pains. Or they minimize the probabilities of those pains happening. But if you really think it through, probably not a good idea from a practical reasoning perspective. Morality, at least for Epicureans, is in large part a matter of prudence, doing what's probably going to turn out best for you, thinking about how pleasures and pains lead to each other. He also says, there are some pains that we choose precisely because they're going to lead to pleasure, so they balance each other out. Here's a couple other things that are important to take into account. He says, the magnitude of pleasure reaches its limit in the removal of all pain. So when we're trying to come up with a standard for, you know, achieving this central goal, we do have to keep that priority of static pleasures in mind. The removal of pains, the removal of all pains, takes us to a kind of limit. Epicurus thinks that it's actually a more pleasurable state to just be at rest and have a few simple pleasures, simple food, simple garments, a nice garden to have conversations in with friends and stuff like that. That is more pleasurable than the sybaritic life of pursue every pleasure possible. So Epicurus would be more for sitting in the garden than, say, going to Vegas, right? That's an important thing to keep in mind, this notion of limit. The other thing that he says, and this leads us to the importance of habit and discipline, says most men are insensible when they rest and mad when they act. So most of us, according to Epicurus, aren't quite ready at this point to take the criterion of pleasure as our guide. We need some practice in learning how to appreciate rest, how to appreciate the lack of trouble, of pain, of anxiety, the freedom that comes with that. Most men are, he says, insensible. They don't realize how good they've got it at that time. And mad when they act, mad because they don't follow practical reasoning and they just go pursue some pleasures or avoid pains without thinking about the consequences. If we act in a deliberate way, which would be part of the practical reasoning tells us that we ought to go about our pleasures and pains in a deliberate way, and we ought to structure our life and our relationships in such a way, this will not be the case for us. The other thing that he does tell us, that I don't have the quote right in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase it, is that we have to address our bad habits and dispositions as if they were evil people who want to do us harm. So if I find, for example, in my own life that I'm subject to fits of anger and that causes me pain because anger itself is a painful emotion and that it causes the people around me pain and alienates them from me to a certain extent, causes rancor, damages the relationships, then I ought to look at my own anger, my own irascibility, my own tendency to fly off the handle or to hold grudges as something like a person inside of me who's constantly screwing up my life, who wants bad for me. If I'm self-indulgent when it comes to food and drink, you know, if I can't keep myself each night from eating a bag of chips as I watch a show on TV, and I feel bad if I don't have that bag of chips, even though my body doesn't need it. My body probably needs the opposite of that. I should look at that habit. I should look at that disposition as if it's an unfriendly, malicious person who's trying to do me harm. That also falls under discipline, and that also falls under practical reasoning or the activity that's involved with prudence.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.